is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Arriving at the airport in Culiacan in Sinaloa State, Mexico, there is merchandise for sale, including a baseball cap with the number 701, 701 on the cap. I welcome Professor Evan Ellis of the U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute. He's the professor of research at the college, and his research can help me understand that number 701. Evan, a very good evening to you. What does 701 point to in this city with a reputation of the centerpiece of the Sinaloa cartel? Good evening.
Good evening to you, John. Well, first of all, 701 is a reference to the fact that several years ago, back in, I believe, 2009, one of the largest cartel bosses, El Chapo Guzman, was ranked by, I believe, Forbes as number 701 among the world's richest people, which indicates the way in which narco trafficking really has taken a significant part in global economies, but also is a point of pride because Culiacan and Sinaloa State really is the heart of El Chapo and the Sinaloa cartel. And so in many ways, it illustrates kind of the celebration of the power of the cartel and the cult of people like El Chapo, not unlike what you saw, for example, with Pablo Escobar in his home, Medellin, and other things.
So what we have here is the celebration of the most famous of the gangsters, his name Guzman, El Chapo. He is now forever at Supermax in the United States, but I take from this extensive piece of investigation by the Wall Street Journal, John Camp, Julie Vernau, Jose de Cordoba, that the Sinaloa cartel prospers not only because it still deals in heroin, where the poppy farmers grow for distribution, chiefly in the United States, but around the world, but a drug that Hollywood is seized upon to make famous, I believe, in one of their series of episodes of gangsters going wrong. Fentanyl. We better begin with fundamentals, Professor, because I've only ever brushed up against this. What is the fentanyl risk? What does it mean?
Sure, John. Well, a little bit of the backstory, as you mentioned, especially on the cartels. Prior to the 2006 war on the cartels that was started by President Felipe Calderon, you had really a domination by a group that used to be called the Guadalajara cartel. There were, for a long time, roughly four major groupings that controlled the border, the Gulf cartel on the east, groups like the Arellano Felix organization and the Carrillo Fuentes organization. And this group that dominated Sinaloa, that was known at the time as the Sinaloa cartel, with old school bosses like El Chapo. Now, what happened over the years, with the war on the cartels, is there was a splintering of the cartels and a diversification. But at the end of the day, in recent years, really two of the major cartels have come to reestablish or dominate and wage proxy wars throughout the country for control. And those are the Sinaloa cartel and the cartel Jalisco Nueva Generacion, based in Jalisco. Now, what relates this especially to fentanyl is that of those surviving kind of major cartels, both of those cartels had relationships to the places that you got first drugs, the precursors for synthetic drugs, especially methamphetamines, things like ephedrine and pseudoephedrine that they sourced largely from China. And then, of course, as fentanyl came off as the new drug of choice, that again, their ties to Asia, where they had the supply chains to precursors and fentanyl itself, from Asian suppliers. So that really positions Sinaloa and Jalisco Nueva Generacion as the key sources and now actually manufacturers of fentanyl. But a couple of things about fentanyl itself, as you ask. So one of the things that makes it, complicated to control is its potency. It's in terms of how many doses per kilogram that you can get. It is far more potent, so to speak, than for example cocaine. But in addition to that, the precursor chemicals that go into fentanyl are relatively easy to get. It's relatively easy to actually make it. And then once you make it, you have something that is highly addictive and highly lethal and can get laced into to other things. And then frankly, it's a lot cheaper for the cartels and a lot easier for them to produce this potent fentanyl in labs in Sinaloa State and elsewhere than it is to do what they call plant-based drugs like cocaine, which of course needs those long supply chains for with coca leaves going all the way back to places like Colombia and Peru, or heroin, which of course needs to be distilled from the chemicals in opium poppies. And so again, it's cheap, it's potent, and as we've seen with 108,000 overdose doses in the United States, because a little difference in the dosage can give you rapidly an overdose to the unsuspecting user, it is absolutely lethal.
What then the article attends to is one particular lab and a young man who is the cook for fentanyl. But I'm more interested in this business relationship with China and with the Mexican government, if that is true. First, let's start with China. The article says that earlier, fentanyl was produced in China and then brought into the United States. And then the U.S. or other allies put pressure on China to stop this trade. China apparently shut it down, but the precursors still come from China. So is it correct to say that China is making money, Chinese precursor factories, pharmaceutical complexes are making money on the fentanyl that is cooked in Mexico?
Well, John, as happens with many other things dealing with China, whether it's environmental or labor regulations or other things, if something becomes sufficiently embarrassing or politically costly to the Chinese government, they do clap down. If it is not, they are oftentimes reluctant to cooperate. And so what happened in this particular case, as you recall, of course, going back to about 2010, when it was you began to have a takeoff of the problems with illegal synthetic drugs and then increasingly opium drugs and then of course later fentanyl. The problem with the drug was that it initially it was being shipped directly in these very small packages from China, where it was not controlled or not regulated because it had legitimate pharmaceutical uses. But then U.S. government, international narcotics and law enforcement put pressure. I was actually at the State Department at the time with a role in part coordinating with INL. And the Chinese, I would say, did not cooperate enthusiastically, but with enough pressure, they did put fentanyl and some of the precursors on controlled lists, which helped to stop those direct mail shipments of fentanyl into the United States. However, what still continued is the shipments, much less regulated, of groups like Sinaloa and Jalisco Nueva Generación that could get fentanyl and other chemical precursors. I mentioned before the ephedrine and pseudoephedrine for methamphetamines. And so they began setting up pill presses in places under their control, these laboratories that you alluded to, and basically bringing fentanyl and other synthetic products into the United States through Mexico. Now, the interesting thing is that those ties go back more than a decade. Sinaloa first had them because they used to source those precursor chemicals for methamphetamines. But again, that became a vehicle for them to use the ties for this new, very, very important fentanyl trade. And of course, the other piece is Jalisco Nueva Generación. And that has to do with the background of the group, because that group originally came out of something that was called the Millennial Cartel, which is actually basically a splinter, essentially, of Sinaloa, led by a man back in the day went by the name of El Nacho Coronel. And so the fact that Jalisco Nueva Generación basically inherited some of those Asia ties. So today it's Sinaloa and Jalisco Nueva Generación that really have been the dominant ones that use those ties to bring fentanyl and precursors into Mexico, and then from Mexico have a dominant position in supplying that lethal drug to the U.S. market.
The reason I asked, Professor, is that I can remember reading some years ago the assumption that China was permitting the fentanyl to flow into the United States because it undermined governance. It was an interpretation, a cynical interpretation of the PRC. However, let's focus on the Mexican government. That was then. This is now. The article in the Wall Street Journal points to López Obrador's government intervening and the ports, the Mexican Navy intervening in the shipments into the country. I don't know how effective it is, given the production scale that the journal is talking about. But in any event, there is also the suggestion that López Obrador backed off at some point. The Navy goes in to intercept, but Sinaloa cartel and its neighbors continue to function at very high production rate. Is all that true? And is López Obrador offering an explanation?
Well, I'm also not sure, John, that I share the idea that with the Chinese it was all a nefarious plot to undermine the United States. But certainly the Chinese were not in any hurry to let us poke our noses under the tent of their internal law enforcement and control processes. Only did so reluctantly when we made it a big political issue. But with respect to the ports, this was something that originally started out with problems with lots of different things with cocaine, with precursors. Chemicals for methamphetamines, et cetera. And the problem was that in the old days, you had an organization that was the Secretary of Communications and Transport, SCT, that had the control of the ports. And so you had basically port captains. But the problem was that these organizations did not have their own security. And so if you were a port captain and that organization, and you had groups coming in and they were bribing their way into controlling the ports and breaching containers to open up a container and put things in and then take things out on the other side. They had the ability to intimidate their way into to that situation, because again, they could essentially threaten the people who ran the port and their families and other things. And so there was a decision that was taken a couple of years ago to bring the Mexican Navy in to initially provide security for the port operations. And that's expanded over the years to the point in which recently the Mexican Navy, who again has a very good reputation for being relatively capable, relatively trusted by the United States. Remember, it was the Mexican Navy rather than the Army that was deliberately selected to take down Ramon Caro Quintana, the big drug capo that we talked about a couple of weeks ago. But so the Mexican Navy essentially now has control over the entire port operations. But again, even as good as they are, it is very difficult with the amount of illicit flows that are coming in, the amount, especially big ports like Lazaro Cardenas on the Pacific coast and Manzanillo. Those are the two big ones for precursor chemicals. And so the situation has gotten better, as you alluded to. They've intercepted something like 320 tons of precursor chemicals in the past 6 months. But, like with the United States trying to keep things from coming up through the U.S. southern border and in the Caribbean, enough of it still gets through it's an enormous problem.
Professor Evan Ellis, U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute. We're just touching on this story that clearly is exploding. However, we must turn to other news that is fresh on the Venezuela-Colombia border. I'm John Batchelor.